Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, we got a guest in the house. Let's go.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
And this segment on The Score is being brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Firestone Complete Auto Care, keeping cars running newer, longer. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
I don't ordinarily start off the show with a guest. Usually we do a lot of other stuff first, and then we bring guests in. But had a serendipitous moment. My man Dan Muller was hanging out in the area at Sweetwater. I said, you got to come be on the show. And he was like, okay, I can be on the show. The head coach of the ISU Redbirds joining me here in studio. Thank you, sir. I know that you're busy. I appreciate you doing this.
Man, it's exciting to be here. You do such a good job. And to be in studio, it's an honor.
So the game is getting ready to tip off. Yeah. Loyola's getting ready to take on Nevada. I know that you're excited to take a look at what's going on. This team, you've played this team a couple times. You were in the MVC final against them. They beat you, were able to make it into the NCAA tournament. And I know that the last 2 years you've been knocking on the door of the NCAA tournament. This Loyola team, how good are they?
They're so good because they don't beat themselves. And, you know, it's a credit to Porter and what he's done. But if you look at their numbers on both ends of the court, their efficiency numbers, they're top three in the country in offensive field goal percentage. I believe they're top 25 in the country in defensive efficiency. And so they're just in position at all times. They take care of the ball offensively. They have five guys on the court almost at all times that can pass, which is an incredibly underrated thing to have as a team. They have four guys on the court almost at all times that shoot 40% from three. And so to guard them is difficult because they're so efficient. They run their stuff. They got the Krutwig inside. They got Jackson inside. And they pass the ball so well. They don't crash the offensive boards. So their defensive transition is terrific, and so you can't score on them in transition. Now you're playing against their set defense all night long, and they're just so fundamentally sound. And so it's a credit to what they're doing. They're really good. We actually played Nevada also earlier in the year at Nevada. But Loyola, I'm not surprised at all that they won two games. And they could have lost either, obviously. Both were close. But our league's good. Our league is really good, and I'm excited to hopefully see another win tonight.
What do you think is going to happen between these two teams now that you got scouting reports on both of them?
You know, when we played Nevada, they had one kid who was still playing. He's injured, and the Drew kid, I forget his first name, Larry Drew's son. But the reason why that's important is because they don't play very many guys. And so they were playing seven. Now they really only play six. Nevada is similar to Loyola in this. They can really pass the ball, really skilled, but they're longer and more athletic. And yet they're not quite as sound. They have, you know, they make more great plays than Loyola, but they'll make more mistakes. Just to be honest, I think Nevada probably has a little bit better team just because they've got a couple guys that are pros. Martin twins, they got twins that are pros. And yet I think it's going to be a really close game. I really do.
You brought up Cameron Krutwig. I've been amazed, Dan, by how good a passer he is for, number one, being a freshman, and number two, being a big man.
He's got the gift that you can't teach. There are a few things in basketball that I believe you can't teach. You know, you can't teach vision. You can't teach, in a lot of ways, you can't teach ball handling. And so you can get better at dribbling. Okay, I can become a better dribbler. But I can never be a ball handler because I think that's something that you grow up with. It's kind of your hand-eye coordination. And then the vision, as I said, he's such a skilled passing big man. And because he's so wide and he's so physical, he can get to passing angles. But he's one of those five guys, like I said, if you have somebody on the court that you can throw it into. Now, he doesn't score great over guys. You know, he can't score. He doesn't make 8-foot hook shots. but he can just dribble back you down, and then he's got four shooters around him. But clearly his offense, the offensive dimension he's added, has kind of taken them to a new level. And yet Jackson is terrific, and, you know, Krutwig only plays 20 minutes a game, but when he's out there, it's just a different dimension. But he can pass the mess out of the ball.
Dante Ingram has been on the show a couple of times. I'm very happy for him.
Yes.
He's a downstate kid who then comes up to Simeon and finds success at Loyola. You watched his career at Loyola. What do you think of him?
Recruited him also. First of all, even in my experience recruiting him, wonderful kid. Okay. Wonderful kid, great family. So, you know, you root for those guys. And we have a lot of, obviously, good kids in our league. His development has been terrific. He's always been able to shoot the ball a little bit, but clearly, you know, he's a deadly shooter now. He's always been able to go left. Now he can go both directions. Obviously, he's put some weight on. And then you add the old experience factor. I mean, you can't replace experience. He's been in big games. He's made big shots, obviously. The thing about what he did in the first game, okay, so the Miami game, and I'm watching the whole game, of course, he did not play well. I mean, he was playing poorly, actually. And I was watching it with I can't remember who, maybe coach. I said if Ingram doesn't do something, I don't think they can win. Made a couple big shots. He makes the big one. But to be able to make a big shot like that after not playing well speaks to character, toughness, experience. But because he can shoot the ball, handle the ball, drive the ball at the four position, it makes it very dangerous, very hard to guard.
You've been in those positions as a player.
Yeah.
You know, I know we're slowly moving farther and farther away
yes, we are.
From your playing days, but in the moment when you know that it's on incumbent upon you to make a shot, what goes through your head?
You know, in those moments, nothing goes through your head, and that's why experience matters, because when you're young, something does go through your head, and it's, oh, my gosh, this is a big shot. And so, you know, the mental part of the game is the most important part once you have some talent. You've got to lose yourself in the game. You can't think of the moment. You got to, you know, we tell our team all the time, you got to trust your training, and that's kind of a military thing, but you have to train. You know, they say, you know, you don't rise to the occasion. You sink to the level of your training is the truth. You know, nobody really rises to the occasion and all of a sudden becomes this great player who can make great plays. What they do is they sink to the level of their training, and those who have put in the work trust themselves enough to just shoot the shot, to just make the play. And we also tell our team all the time, winning is not about making great plays. It's about just making the right play time after time after time after time. And so once you get in the moment and it's time to shoot that shot that he made, or any big shot, you know, Custer's three-pointer a minute earlier, which was a wide-open three and yet a very pressure shot, you have to trust yourself and just let it go. You start thinking about what might happen if you miss, you're going to miss.
What does this run that they're on do for the Missouri Valley Conference?
I really think it's huge. Our league is really good. I think I've been pretty outspoken.
You've been banging the table about that for years.
Yeah, I've been outspoken about that. And we don't get the credit for the talent of teams. And so I think committee members or whoever looks and maybe sees the size, because maybe we don't have as many bigs. If they're in the Big Ten, they wouldn't even finish, blah, blah. Give me a break. That's trash, okay? So what this run for Loyola does, the year after Wichita State leaves, okay, number one, we had the eighth best RPI in the country, which last year with Wichita, we had the 11th. We haven't been eighth in 6 years. And so it just shows that our league's in good shape and in good hands. And then with Loyola doing what they're doing, obviously, shows that we can continue to it doesn't show us, because we know that.
Right.
You know, but it shows recruits, or it shows your fan base, or hopefully it shows the country that, you know, the Shockers weren't the only team that could actually beat some people. And so, and don't get me wrong, Wichita State represented our league tremendously. But it's big, and it also gives every, you know, just like when the first time when George Mason went to the Final Four, right? They told, well, is this going to mean other mid-majors, quote-unquote, will go far, because it just shows you can do it. It's like when Bannister broke the four-minute mile, and then within a year, whatever, 20 other people did. This shows everybody in our league, including our team, hey, that could be us. But you have to do these things to get there. And so it's great. And Porter's a terrific guy and a heck of a coach, so I'm really happy for him and his staff. but it's great for our league.
We were worried, and then the Valley came through up here in Chicago. We were really worried because we're sitting there going, okay, well, DePaul, not going. UIC had a chance. They're not going to the tournament. So we start looking around, and then there's the Valley with four teams in the state of Illinois in the semifinals. Like, one of them's going through. Somebody's going to the tournament.
Thank goodness, right? Praise the Lord. It was. And at that, as you said, so Bradley, us, Southern Illinois, and Loyola were the four teams left. Obviously, you get an automatic bid. So at that point, we knew an Illinois team was going. And first time it's ever happened. Now, Loyola's only been in the league for a few years, so it's the first time it could happen. But it's big. It's big for the state, I guess. You know, we want multiple teams from the state in. We want multiple teams from our league in. And I'm just hoping we get back to the point to where we have multiple bids. And that's what's best for our league. I want every team to be really good. I really do. I just want us to be the best. Loyola's going to keep it going. They've got a bunch of guys come back. I think our league can be even better next year.
Dan Muller, the head coach of the ISU Redbirds, joining me here in studio. What are you doing in Chicago?
I'm actually up here. So my wife, who, as anybody knows, there's a special place in heaven for coaches' wives.
Absolutely.
Right? My wife works at State Farm, and she had a conference up here. And so she said, can you come up with me just at night or whatever? Now, she's busy all day, of course. And so I came up last night. We had dinner and stayed in town, and I'll head back. We have an official visit this weekend, but she does so much for me, of course. I said, if I can make it work and recruiting's okay. So I was blessed enough to be able to come, and we'll watch the game together tonight.
Okay, good. Are you paying attention to what's going on with your Chicago Bears?
You better believe it, because, look, hey, if there's one sport where you can go from worst to first, right, it's the NFL, right?
It happens every year.
Every year. I'm very optimistic, and I'm pretty realistic. Probably my Bears is where I'm the biggest fan. And so, you know, fans are irrational, right? But I really thought going into this offseason we were only a couple wide receivers away from being really good. I really did. Our line, as long as we're healthy, is terrific. I like Trubisky. I think he's going to be good. Obviously, we had some injuries last year. But, hey, man, it's a tough conference because Minnesota's not going anywhere, right?
Aaron Rodgers is back.
Aaron Rodgers, he's a beast. Detroit's, you know, but I'm optimistic, man. I think we got it this year.
Okay, that's good. Is it? I love when I see people who are, you know, professionals at one thing get excited about something else in sports. When you watch games, are you like the crazy people who are at Redbird Arena?
All right, so for my Bears, if we practice on a Sunday, I record it and I tell my team, they all know, do not tell me the score because I'm watching it that night. I don't look at Twitter, nothing. I go home and I watch it, period. I usually watch it by myself. My wife will sit down and entertain me and just like, hey, okay, I'll watch for a second. But, yeah, I'm yelling. I'm yelling at the screen. Absolutely. They don't hear me. And I'm not a football expert. You know, I know the game, but I don't, it's like a lot of people watching basketball. You think you're an expert, but you're not, which is fine. So I know enough, but yeah, I get excited. I got my Bears shirts, you know, absolutely. It's the only sport I have. I don't think I have any Bulls shirts. I'm a Bulls fan and White Sox. I got my Bears shirts.
No White Sox stuff?
I got a hat and stuff. I got a big head. I'm a bad hat guy.
We gotta get you up to White Sox, and like I'm sure we could get you throwing out the first pitch or something.
I'd love to. I used to play a little baseball in high school.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could make something happen with the folks over on 35th and Shields.
I would love to. Absolutely. Can you get it where I can run out and get the kickoff?
Get the tee?
Can I be that guy with the Bears?
I love that idea.
Pull a hamstring.
Our sister station WBBM carries the Bears. We might be. And our buddy, Mark Grody, who is an ISU Redbird, is now going to be doing the sideline reporting.
Love it.
For the Bears. So maybe
we got Redbirds everywhere now.
I know. I mean, Ronji's down in St. Louis now. Grody is taking care of the Bears. You guys are showing up and showing out.
Absolutely.
So ISU basketball.
Yes.
What do I need to be excited about?
Well, a lot, I think. You know, we return everybody. We had no seniors this year. So if you look at last year's team, not this year, but last year, we graduated. We five of our top six scorers left. You know, we came in with a brand new team. I thought we had a chance to be good. I'm not sure how good. Then we had a rash of injuries. And we had one guy playing every game this year. Everybody else at least missed one game due to injury. So a lot of ups and downs, adversity, but had a good solid year. I mean, we finished second best team in our league, I think a lot would say. And we returned everybody. We had a couple guys sitting out, some guys coming in. Malik Yarborough, Chicago kid, is gonna test the NBA waters, you know, put his name in the draft and see where he's gonna end up, and I think he'll make a smart decision. If he's gonna be a first rounder, I'll push him out. If he's not, he'll come back. So as long as Malik comes back, I think our team next year has a chance to be the best team I've had, and it might not even be close. We got a lot of work to do, but we got a lot of talent next year. Got a great schedule too, so I think Redbird fans should be very excited about what we have coming in next year.
How much time do you take away from basketball to stay sane?
I'm pretty good with that. I'm pretty good with that. I'm pretty balanced. One thing, I don't read message boards or Twitter or anything like that, so I don't occupy myself with really what many other people are thinking negatively or whatever. And this right now is a heavy recruiting time. And so, you know, the season's over and you're right into recruiting and we'll start some workouts, what have you. But May's a great month. Once we get everything wrapped up, May's a great month. I give my staff, hey, look, come in the office when you need to. We have some meetings. We do some stuff when our players leave town after finals. And you just have to decompress a little bit. I mean, you have to, I believe. Now, during that time, you're still recruiting, making phone calls, you're watching film, you're getting ready. But I love watching basketball. So it's not work for me to watch and study and, okay, what do we need to do next year? That's not work for me. Like, if I have nothing else to do, I'd love to do that. So I have a great wife, and, you know, it's important to keep balance. We have great fans. And when you win, it's easier to be happy. We've won a decent amount recently, but I'm pretty good at making sure my life has some balance.
How's your battle going with the Power Five conferences to schedule games?
Not bad. I mean, not bad if you're rational. We're never going to get all these home and homes all of a sudden. We got a home and home with Ole Miss, which was kind of publicized, and we played at their place this year. They return to us next year. That's the only one we got. We'll reach out. We've already reached out to most, and it's not going to happen. But we got great series with BYU. San Diego State comes in with Mountain West Challenge.
BYU comes
in. So our home schedule next year, we got Ole Miss coming in. We got BYU coming in. We got San Diego State coming in. We got Florida Gulf Coast coming in. I mean, we've got a terrific schedule. So are we all of a sudden going to get any home and homes? I doubt it. We'll keep trying, but we could still build a quality. We had the 10th toughest strength of schedule in the country this year, non-conference. Nevada was great. Boise State was great. BYU was really good. We beat Ole Miss. We beat South Carolina. Tulsa had a good year. We beat them twice. Murray State had a great year. So we can put a quality schedule together. It's just not going to have, most likely, a plethora of Power Five conference teams.
Dan, I appreciate you doing this and coming in here, and I know that you want to get to the game. I'm going to let you get to the game, but I appreciate you stopping by, and you're always good to this show, and we appreciate that.
Hey, I love coming in. Love to come back sometime. You do a great job, and we love our Redbird alum in the Chicago area.
I know that's right. That's Dan Muller. I'm going to talk about your White Sox in the next segment.
Let's do it.
I'm going to do that. We're going to talk a little White Sox. That is the head coach of the ISU Redbirds, Dan Muller. We appreciate him with the preview. If you want to go watch the Loyola game, go watch it. Keep the sound down. Listen to what we got coming up next. Eno Saris is going to join me at 6:40. We're going to talk White Sox a little bit next here on The Score. Yo, I appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. Lawrence Holmes here with you until Cubs baseball, right? Isn't that what we're doing? We got a Cubs game coming up at 8:55, but I got you until then, and there's still a lot of stuff that we want to get done. Big thanks to Dan Muller, the head coach of the ISU Redbirds. Some great, great stuff from him. He's always good. And I'm not kidding. I was literally out to dinner at Sweetwater, which is a restaurant that was right down the street here from The Score. Met my wife, and we were walking out, and so she went through the revolving door, and I stopped, and she kept walking, and I stopped because I saw Dan. Dan and I have talked on the air and via, you know, texts and whatever, but we've never met. So I was like, Dan? And then we started talking. I was like, you got to come in studio. So he was nice enough to come and hang out, and I really, you know, we got a lot of affection for the ISU Redbirds, and we appreciate him being a part of the show. I wanted to talk a little baseball. Eno Saris is going to join me at 6:40. I'm really looking forward to him. I think he's the coolest guy that covers baseball, period. You'll find out why at 6:40. But I had two cool guys in here a couple nights ago that cover the White Sox, and they had some really interesting things to say, which I'll get to in a second. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legal advice. I had the guys from the White Sox Talk podcast in here, and we had a great hour. You should go check it out, 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show. But we spent a really good amount of time talking about Eloy Jimenez. And after that's done, I want to talk to you about the forgotten superstar of the White Sox.
Well, there's his baseball ability. He's a huge guy. And, you know, we actually had him on the podcast, I think, a week after the Cubs traded him, or the White Sox acquired him in the Jose Quintana deal. He does speak English. He prefers to speak Spanish because I think he's more comfortable in a media setting. But if you ask him and you're really nice and he trusts you and he feels comfortable, he'll speak English. And he just flat out said, I want to be as good as Miguel Cabrera and Mike Trout. He wants to be that way. He envisions his future and he thinks he has the ability to be that good, be that great. And when he's on the field, things happen. And there is this thing about him where he seizes the big moments. You know, there was he's in the home run derby last summer. He hits a light tower during a home run derby in the minor leagues. He comes into the Cubs-Sox game, hasn't hit in 2 weeks in a major league or whatever, a Cactus League game. Goes against his former team. He has to persuade Ricky Renteria to put him in the game. And what does he do? He hits a home run. Three-run homer.
Go-ahead homer in the eighth inning.
Right.
He's the guy that goes up, and when he stands in the batter's box, he looks at the light, and he's like, you know, hang on. Let me adjust. Okay, now it's on me. Give me that pitch.
Yeah. And then the next game, he hits a home run. And his next at bat, it's a triple. This guy who had a messed up knee is running around the bases like Grease Lightning, ends up with a triple. He sees his big moments. And then last year, he does it. I was on Instagram. He looks into the camera and says, I'm going to hit a home run today for this kid. And what does he do? He hits a home run. This is baseball.
First at bat.
Yeah.
First game with Birmingham, boom, home run.
Yeah. Baseball is the toughest sport. You can say golf is the toughest sport. Hitting a baseball is the toughest thing to do in sports. And at times, Eloy Jimenez makes it look easy, and he's 21.
And the sound, like when he's in the cage, you could be walking away and go, what was that? And you're like, oh, Eloy Jimenez is in the cage. It just, everything about, he hit one, I remember, one of the last days I was, and he was fresh. He's, didn't get it. And it hit the wall on the fly. I'm like, if we're talking about didn't get it in a home run, yeah, you're right. But I know he meant like he didn't kill it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yoan Moncada, we were talking about him before the break, that he could be a great player, but the one player in their organization who has the highest ceiling, the biggest upside, is Eloy Jimenez. The Cubs got a great player who I love in Jose Quintana.
And they'll have him for a couple more years.
Yeah, I think was it 4 more years? I think it is.
Three more seasons.
Three more seasons, okay?
And they got him for $27 million.
Yes.
Because no one writes contracts like Rick Hahn. Nobody. True.
That is the key to the rebuild, by the way. Those contracts made this rebuild not just very good, but it's going to turn this franchise around much quicker.
Yeah.
But my point was with Eloy is that if he can be this player that we are all envisioning, that'll be the Cubs' worst nightmare. In that,
what if Jose Quintana is on a parade float?
That could happen.
So I mean, you have to kind of balance your expectations,
right?
If that happens to Eloy Jimenez and he's an MVP 3 or 4 years from now, but Jose Quintana rode down Michigan Avenue, I mean that's a win-win for both teams.
Agreed. It's a trade that worked out for both teams. We spent a lot of time talking about Eloy. There's another guy that we probably should have been talking about that White Sox fans for some reason aren't. I'll explain after Shu is done with this scoreboard update.
Shu, thank you very much. So, Chuck Garfine, Ryan McGuffey, when they were in here, we were talking about Eloy Jimenez. And we came to the conclusion kind of later on in the conversation that White Sox fans aren't spending that much time talking about Yoan Moncada. And I really want to make the case that Yoan is not a finished product yet.
Although, when you start to look at the numbers that he had last year at the end of the season, I understand why people are very excited. If you don't know, now you know. He is going to experiment with leading off. They are going to do that. And when you look at his numbers last year, he ended up being a 750 player, which is really good for an 1.7 WAR player for a guy that came up and didn't spend a lot of time with the team. And then you start looking at his monthly splits where he seemed to get better. Now, I am uncomfortable projecting players off of September numbers, is always been my feeling, but he did have a really great September. Moncada in September, 276, 349, 469 to make him an 818 player. In August, he was a 781 player. So once he kind of got comfortable after those first 12 games, you saw a better version of him. You saw a guy that was willing to take some walks. He ended up finishing the season with 109 plate appearances and with 29 walks. So I'm hoping that that's something that continues, and him hitting leadoff is something that we should be paying more attention to, but it's weird. Everyone knows where the White Sox are on their horizon, their time horizon. So we all are like, okay, not a lot matters. But it's one of the things that's going on in Glendale that I'm curious to see works once the team comes north and east. More east than, well, it's about the same, east and north. When they come back to Chicago is what I'm trying to say. Coming up next, I'm going to talk to one of the smartest and most interesting dudes that covers baseball right now. Eno Saris is going to join me, and I cannot wait. If you've never heard Eno, this is a guy that you need to be following. This is a guy that you need to check out his work in The Athletic. He's incredible, and I'm looking forward to having a discussion on both teams and some of the big picture issues in Major League Baseball. We'll do that next here on The Score. Glad that you're hanging around. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until Cubs baseball, which we'll have at 8:55. This segment being brought to you by Orkin. Termites aren't funny. $5 billion of damage a year won't have you busting a gut. Visit Orkin.com today to save 15% on termite control. Orkin, pest control down to a science. Eno Saris is one of the coolest and smartest guys that covers baseball. Period. Paragraph. I love when he graces the show. I love his stuff on Twitter. At Eno Saris, E-N-O-S-A-R-R-I-S. You should follow him. You should check out his work for The Athletic. Covers local and national baseball. And I'm glad to have him here on The Score. Eno, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. The season's almost here.
Almost. We're almost there. Are you visiting Chicago anytime soon? Because I know you like to come in and do beers and stuff.
Yeah, in July is when I usually come. So I'll come in July.
Okay, good.
I don't early sort of winter Chicago. I was there in December, and I was like, I'm not doing this again.
Okay, I completely understand that. And in July, I want to get you in studio. We'll have beers and all sorts of stuff, and you can come and hang out.
All right, we'll do that.
First things first, I want to talk a little business of baseball with you, if you don't mind. What would be the lasting effect of this year's free agency?
I think it'll be labor strife. I think that the players, from what I gather, it's all off the record, but, you know, they're not necessarily happy about this. And they think that basically the carrot on the stick used to be, when you get to free agency, you'll get yours. That's why we have arbitration. That's why this is all set up this way. And now that carrot is not there anymore. You know, there's especially, you know, the top part of the free agent market is still getting paid. You know, Eric Hosmer still got his, but the middle class is gone. I mean, Todd Frazier got $16, $17 million for 2 years, and that's weird.
So what do they do between now and the time that the CBA ends to put themselves in a better position?
Honestly, I think I would hire, you know, back when the Players Association was really strong and put themselves in a better position than most of the players' associations across sports, the guys at the helm were negotiators, sharks, you know. And I'm not calling for anybody's job or anything, but I just think they need to prepare themselves for that sort of negotiation. They need to go in there. And last time they negotiated, it was about, can we have a chef, you know, in every clubhouse? You know, can we make sure travel is figured out and this and that? And it was about sort of comfy lifestyle type stuff. This one needs to be about money. It needs to be about brass taxes. It needs to be about players getting paid. It needs to be move the free agency up or, you know, double the minimum salary. Because right now, $500,000, if you're getting paid $500,000 for a couple of years and then you get arbitration and then there's no free agency at the end, you know, it's hard for me, you know, some people to understand because they say, well, these guys make a lot of money. But, you know, they're the very, very best at what they do. There's not many people who can do it, and they should get free market value sooner than they're getting it.
I thought it was interesting, and I was actually down in Mesa when this was going on, that Chris Bryant is now a guy that's not very vocal about things, is now becoming more vocal about this. And when you see one of the faces of the league and someone who is clearly a superstar embracing the idea of being a big part of labor negotiations, I think that that's got to concern some teams that – It's not just the rank and file or the guy that's trying to hang on to a career. When your biggest stars are worried about this, not just for themselves but for other people, I think there's some power behind that.
Yeah, and Chris Bryant himself was sort of part of the machinery. Like, you know, he had that big moment where they kept him down, you know, for the first couple of weeks of the year in order to get an extra year of team control out of him. And so he's really saw the kind of ugly part of this. And it's so weird because we've all just sort of, we just look over that now. We say, oh yeah, the Braves, they're smart for sending Ronald Acuna down. He's the number one prospect in baseball. He's ready to go. He hit in the Arizona Fall League. He hit in AA. He hit in AAA. He's hitting in spring. He's ready to go. But, you know, oh, it's cool. They need another year of team control out of him. What happened to the idea that, like, the best players should be in the big leagues and, you know, should just be playing? You know, like, why are we all cool with this, that, like, this is how the teams work? Because it's in the rules that they collectively bargain, but it doesn't mean that it's right. And I think Chris Bryant has a unique perspective on why it's not necessarily right.
You know, what are people that you're talking to saying about the kind of underappreciated story, minor leaguers being excluded from the federal wage and hour laws?
They are, I mean, the minor leaguers are extremely unhappy about it, and very few of them are saying anything because they also are afraid for their jobs. And I'm right now trying to get a couple of them to go on record, and nobody wants to go on record just about a simple little thing. I have a piece coming out. I think it will be compelling. It's just a simple little thing about what it is to be a minor leaguer and what your life is like on a daily level. But just to put their name on that, nobody wants to put their name on it because they feel like they'll get blackballed. They're not members of the Major League Players Association, so they're not protected by the Players Association, and they feel sort of scared and, you know, abused a little bit. I think this is a full-time job that they do. It's a full-time, year-round job. We don't ask them to have second jobs anymore. We ask them to throw year-round. We ask them to train year-round. And so to pretend like these guys are, oh, they just play 4 or 5 months out of the year, and they just play, you know, 30, 40 hours a week, I think that's really missing the point. That's not what these guys do. These guys live baseball, and it's absurd to pay them $10,000 a year. I think most players are on board with this.
Eno Saris of The Athletic joining me here on The Score. We're talking business of baseball and now some of the fun stuff of baseball. Eno, what's your favorite pitch?
What's my favorite pitch?
Is it Kershaw's curveball, Yu Darvish's changeup? Is it Sale's slider?
Oh, so like a single pitch. I thought you were thinking maybe pitch type. Oh, man. I kind of like Greinke's power changeup. It goes like 88, 89 miles an hour and looks like other people's changeups. Andy can command it. I mean, it's just a crazy pitch. And it comes from Felix Hernandez's power changeup, so it has kind of a cool story behind it. But there's only like two or three of them in the game right now, and it's really compelling to sort of see, and it's a really useful weapon for them.
Are the Angels regretting getting Shohei Ohtani, and what do they do if he looks this not ready to play at the major league level. What does that mean?
Well, I've seen a little bit of a different story. When I watch him pitch, I see a guy who's ready to play and ready to pitch. I think he'll be good. He's got a lot of strikeouts this spring. He's got to find the American League zone. There was going to be some hiccups. You know, he's facing guys with different swing tendencies. You know, he's got to learn the players. But I see a guy who has ace-like stuff and is basically very close to where Yu Darvish was coming in. He may have some hiccups with the walk rate or whatever. I think he's ready to go pitching-wise. Hitting-wise, I've always wondered how far along he'd be. He just hasn't gotten the reps of other guys, have played in the minor leagues as hitters. So I think hitting-wise, we're not going to see too much of him. I think he'll be more of a pinch hitter, last bat on the bench type thing before too long, and he won't necessarily be playing a lot hitting-wise. He's got a while to go there.
You brought up Yu Darvish. What do you think the Cubs are getting with this version of Darvish?
I think he's going to really surprise some people. I think he might win the Cy Young this year.
Why?
He's always had great stuff, and I know that the Dodgers had a couple things on his plate when he got there, but having seen the idea, the adjustments that they had for him, I wasn't actually that impressed with what they came up with. And I actually think I have a lot of respect for the front office, for the Cubs, and the types of results they've coaxed out of guys like Kyle Hendricks. I just think that they have a great idea of a plan for him. He's got great velocity still. He's got great pitches. He's healthy. He's going to figure out that tipping thing. I don't care about, you know, a couple World Series things that didn't go his way. I think he's a very good pitcher in a very good situation right now.
What is it about the Cubs as an organization? Because you're not the first person to tell me that they seem to get it when it comes to bringing in pitchers that fit what they want to do. What do they do right as an organization to bring guys along?
They have some really smart people in the front office that when I first started writing, I used to be like, wow, these guys are so great. And, of course, they got hired. And this guy named Jeremy Greenhouse is in their front office. People don't really know who he is, but I've been trying to do what I'm sure he's done already because I haven't seen under the hood necessarily, but it was what he was working on. I've been trying to do what he's been working on for my whole career, trying to put a number on stuff. And it comes from work that he started. So, you know, they've got some guys there that are really smart, but not only that, they have an organizational philosophy that's sort of really open-minded. And, you know, John Baker does some stuff with them that I think other teams would be like, what are you talking about? And he's director of mental skills. Like, how many other teams have a director of mental skills? So, you know, I think that they have, like, an open mind and are willing to try a lot of different things and are not too rooted in any one thing. They're not only stats. They're not only scouts. They're not only weird stuff. You know, they're going to try a lot of different things, see what works, and keep doing that.
I think that's a great point that you make, because a lot of times I feel like people look at the Cubs and go, oh, well, they're a bunch of guys who crunch numbers, and that's not who they are. I mean, they have a foot deep into the world of analytics. But I think one of the things that sets Theo apart as a guy that's running a baseball franchise is that he understands the limitations of just being that there is a big part of this is personal, that they believe in scouting, and that for some reason there's still the people that feel like you have to have one or the other, and they've figured out that there's a marriage that happens, and when that marriage is right, you win a World Series.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get there these days with just the numbers. And even like the Astros, if you look at the Astros, how many guys did they hit on? You know, how many guys that their scouts, you know, go and identify were great hitters that have turned out to be great hitters. So, you know, I think they're actually, you know, one thing about their pitching is I think they've done really well considering that, you know, their plan has been to sort of buy free agent pitchers and find pitchers that they can easily acquire. That's not normally a great way to build a great pitching staff, because you're buying guys who are post peak. When you sign a free agent, they're past their peak. So, you know, signing a lot of past their peak pitchers and looking for pitchers that are sort of freely available, you think, well, they have a bad pitching staff. But I wouldn't say they have a bad pitching staff. I think they put together a pretty good one.
What's the next technological thing in baseball that you're interested in?
I wrote a piece about on The Athletic about VR. And I think virtual reality is really interesting because, you know, when we talk about pitchers having a hard time getting through the order three times, what's happening there is that by the third time through the order, the hitter has seen everything the pitcher has to offer. And so he has a good idea of what's coming. He's got a good idea of what it looks like, and he's got a plan and ready to attack. So naturally, that means that the first time through the order, the hitter is at a disadvantage. Well, now you have virtual reality, and I think it's getting really close to the point now where a batter could step in against Corey Kluber before he ever got on the field and really interact with Corey Kluber, like really have a real plate appearance with Corey Kluber where it's all sort of artificial intelligence and virtual reality, and he really feels, maybe he wipes out, maybe he strikes out, but he got that strikeout out of the way, and he kind of saw the breaking ball and got ready for it. So now when he steps to the plate the first time, it's actually the second time. I think that could be a real advantage for hitters, and I think that's a really interesting thing that, you know, baseball may want to think about, you know, if they're going to have some rules in place about this, because somebody was saying, well, what if the batters on deck had VR in their batting helmet on deck and were just sort of, you know, facing Corey Kluber on deck? And I said, well, man, that might be taking it pretty far.
It might be, but I think it's a fascinating thing. And, you know, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining me. Your work on The Athletic is fantastic, and I appreciate you jumping on the show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot.
Eno Saris of The Athletic. That's a dude you want to follow, man. If you're into baseball, Eno Saris is that dude, for real. Our buddy Rami Makhlouf is going to come and join us. We're going to hang out with him. He's a Milwaukee guy. The Brewers, we need to talk about them. I thought maybe they have a chance, and then they didn't sign Yu Darvish or Jake Arrieta. So what in the world are they going to do now? Rami will talk about that. We'll talk about the Packers with him too, and just hang out. He's a good man and thorough. Back after this on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.